A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been thinking about ice cream, not just as a treat, but as something that gets unfairly dismissed as junk food. He points out that good quality ice cream is actually a pretty wholesome food, and he's noticed something interesting personally. After gallbladder surgery years ago, he found his system handles cold, high quality ice cream more easily than other foods. There's something about the cold and the protein structure, he thinks. So the question is, in moderation, is there a case that ice cream might actually be one of the less destructive indulgences out there?
I love this question. I spent 2 years behind the counter at the Yukon Dairy Bar scooping ice cream while my classmates were dissecting cadavers. So yes, I have feelings.
You've been waiting for this prompt your entire adult life.
Since 1993. The Dairy Bar isn't just some campus stand. It's been operating since the 1950s. All the milk comes from Yukon's own herd of about 100 Holsteins and Jerseys. You can walk from the barn to the pasteurizer to the batch freezer in under 3 minutes. I've done that walk.
You've seen the whole chain. Cow to cone.
Cow to cone. And when you see it that way, the junk food label starts to feel incomplete in a way that misses what's actually in the stuff.
All right. What's actually in good ice cream?
Milk, cream, sugar, egg yolks, and whatever flavoring you're adding. If you're looking at a premium ice cream, by which I mean low overrun, the amount of air whipped into it, you're looking at about 10 to 16% milk fat, 9 to 12% milk solids, not fat, and egg yolks doing double duty as emulsifier and richness. No mystery ingredient.
Define overrun for me.
The percentage increase in volume from air incorporation during freezing. Start with a gallon of liquid mix, end up with 2 gallons of ice cream. That's 100% overrun. Cheap industrial ice cream runs at 100 to 120%. Premium. Häagen-Dazs is around 25%. Ben & Jerry's about 30 to 40. The Yukon Dairy Bar ran about 30% when I was there.
Half the grocery store freezer aisle is just air.
Air and stabilizers. And that's where the junk food critique has teeth. If you're eating a tub listing gargum, carrageenan, mono and diglycerides, and corn syrup as the second ingredient after milk, you're not eating ice cream in any meaningful sense. The FDA distinguishes these. To be labeled ice cream, a product needs at least 10% milk fat and must meet density requirements. Much of the freezer aisle doesn't qualify.
What's it called instead?
Frozen dairy dessert. That's the legal term. They've replaced milk fat with vegetable oils or whey protein concentrates, pumped it full of air and stabilizers, and sweetened it with corn syrup. It's ice cream the way a sofa cushion is a pillow.
The glockenspiel of dairy products.
It mimics the form without the substance. So the first thing to say is we need to be clear what we're talking about. Premium ice cream made from milk, cream, sugar, and eggs is a fundamentally different food from the stabilizer and air product wearing its name tag.
Let's talk about that premium stuff. The prompt mentioned protein structure and cold temperature making it easier to digest. Is there anything to that?
More than you'd think. Milk contains two main proteins, casein and whey. Casein makes up about 80% and has this interesting property. In the stomach, it forms a soft curd that digests slowly. This is why casein is popular among bodybuilders as a nighttime protein. It releases amino acids gradually.
Time-release protein.
But here's where freezing gets interesting. The ice crystals and churning process physically alter the fat globule structure, breaking and partially coalescing them. The fat in ice cream is already partially destabilized before it hits your stomach. A fascinating paper out of the University of Guelph a few years ago, I think 2023, looked at milk fat digestibility in different dairy matrices. They found the physical structure of the food matters enormously for how the fat is processed, not just the chemical composition.
The same ingredients consumed as warm milk versus frozen ice cream behave differently in the body.
Differently enough that it's worth studying. The Guelph group calls this the food matrix effect. The idea that nutritional impact isn't just the sum of nutrients on a label, it's how those nutrients are structurally arranged. two foods with identical fat and sugar content can have different metabolic effects depending on their physical structure.
That feels like a finding that should be more widely discussed.
It really should. And it connects directly to what the prompt was getting at about cold temperature. When you ingest cold, high-fat food, the fat is more solid at body temperature initially. The stomach has to warm it and break it down, which slows gastric emptying. For someone who's had gallbladder surgery, rapid gastric emptying can be a real problem. Bile isn't stored and concentrated in a gallbladder anymore, it just drips continuously from the liver. Slower digestion can actually be easier to handle.
The cold is a feature, not a bug.
In this context, potentially. There's also the fact that ice cream is a low-volume, calorie-dense food. After gallbladder removal, large fatty meals can overwhelm the system because there's no stored bile reserve. But a small amount of premium ice cream delivers satiety without volume. Half a cup of Häagen-Dazs vanilla is about 260 calories, 17 grams of fat, and 21 grams of sugar. It's not nothing, but it's not a plate of fried food either.
The prompt was careful to say moderation. Nobody's advocating a pint a day.
I am not a practicing physician anymore, and this is not medical advice. But the question was whether ice cream gets an unfairly bad rap, and I think the answer is yes, with nuance.
Let's talk about the sugar. That's usually the main indictment.
A half-cup serving of premium vanilla has about 20 to 25 grams of sugar, roughly 5 to 6 teaspoons. The American Heart Association recommends no more than about 36 grams per day for men and 25 for women. So one modest serving pushes the daily limit. That's not nothing. That same half cup is also delivering about 250 milligrams of calcium, some vitamin D if the milk was fortified, about 4 to 5 grams of protein, and meaningful amounts of vitamin A and riboflavin. Compare that to a can of soda, about 39 grams of sugar and literally nothing else. No protein, no fat to slow absorption, no micronutrients. They're both sugar vehicles in the popular imagination, but one is also a nutrient delivery system, and the other is sugar water.
The nutritional equivalent of beige wallpaper versus actual food.
The fat in ice cream slows sugar absorption, blunting the glycemic response. A study from the Harvard School of Public Health, I want to say 2024, found whole-fat dairy was associated with lower diabetes risk than low-fat dairy, which is counterintuitive to the old public health messaging. The hypothesis is that the milk fat globule membrane contains bioactive lipids affecting insulin sensitivity.
We spent decades being told to drink skim milk, and it might have been exactly wrong.
We might have been optimizing for the wrong variable. The dairy matrix strikes again. Premium ice cream is essentially a whole food dairy product. The ingredients are minimally processed, pasteurized, homogenized, frozen, churned, but not fractionated. You're getting the whole milk fat globule, the casein micelles, the whey proteins, all in their natural proportions. Very different from eating a processed food assembled from isolated ingredients.
What about the egg yolks?
In a French-style custard base, egg yolks contribute about 1 to 2% of the total mix by weight. In a half-cup serving, you're getting maybe a third of an egg yolk, a small amount of lecithin, a natural emulsifier, plus a little choline and lutein. Not a health food because of the yolks, but another data point in the "This is actual food" column.
Walk me through what makes the Yukon Dairy Bar product different from a tub of store brand vanilla.
Yukon's herd is a mix of Holsteins and Jerseys. Holsteins for volume, Jerseys for butterfat. The blend gives you milk naturally higher in milk fat and protein than commodity dairy. It's pasteurized on-site, the base is made fresh, and it's frozen within hours. Commercial ice cream mix often sits in tanker trucks, gets shipped across state lines, and might be weeks old before freezing.
Does that affect the nutritional profile?
Fresher milk means less oxidation of the milk fat. Oxidized cholesterol and fats are implicated in negative health outcomes. Also, small batch ice cream tends to use fewer stabilizers because it's not being shipped across the country and sitting in a distribution center freezer for months. The Yukon Dairy Bar Vanilla had exactly 4 ingredients, milk, cream, sugar, egg yolks. No stabilizers, no gums. It didn't need them because it was eaten within days.
The prompt mentioned feeling like there was something slightly healing about it. That's a strong word.
I want to be careful not to overclaim. But I think what the prompt was getting at, and I recognize this from conversations with people who've had GI surgery, is that finding foods that feel good to eat, that don't cause pain or discomfort, is genuinely important for quality of life. After gallbladder removal, a lot of people develop food anxiety. They're afraid to eat because they don't know what's going to trigger symptoms. Finding something predictable, pleasurable, and non-problematic, that's not nothing.
That's a quality of life argument more than a nutritional one.
Yes, and it's valid. There's a whole literature on the psychology of eating after GI surgery. Food isn't just fuel. The pleasure of eating matters for adherence to a healthy diet overall. If you dread every meal, you'll end up malnourished or binging on something that really is junk because you're desperate for a positive food experience.
Like adopting a feral cat. You think you're getting a pet. You're actually getting a hostage situation. Same with healthy, ultra-processed food. It promises nutrition, delivers misery, and you end up eating a sleeve of Oreos at 11 p.m.
That's a perfect analogy. The feral cat of dietary choices. Premium ice cream is more like a well-socialized house cat. It's still a cat, still a treat, but it's not going to shred your furniture.
I want to go back to the food matrix effect. You said two foods with identical fat and sugar content can have different metabolic effects. That seems like it should upend how we think about nutrition labeling.
It absolutely should, and it's starting to. The nutrition facts label tells you about nutrients in isolation. It doesn't tell you anything about the structure those nutrients are embedded in. A handful of almonds and an equivalent amount of almond oil have different effects on satiety and lipid absorption because the almonds have intact cell walls trapping some of the fat. Same principle with dairy. Cheese, yogurt, and ice cream all have different matrices despite similar macronutrient profiles, and they affect the body differently.
Is there research specifically on ice cream?
Less than I'd like, but what exists is suggestive. A 2023 review in Nutrients looked at dairy food matrix effects and concluded that fermented dairy and full-fat dairy consistently showed neutral or beneficial associations with cardiovascular outcomes, contrary to what you'd predict from saturated fat content alone. Ice cream wasn't the main focus, but it falls under the full-fat dairy umbrella.
Saturated fat in ice cream might not behave like saturated fat in a processed snack cake.
That's the hypothesis. The milk fat globule membrane, a triple-layer phospholipid membrane surrounding each fat droplet, contains sphingolipids and proteins that may modulate how the body processes the saturated fat inside. In butter, the membrane is largely destroyed during churning. In ice cream, it's partially intact. The processing matters.
This is getting into the weeds in a way I enjoy.
This is my happy place. We haven't even talked about the calcium-phosphorus ratio yet.
Talk about the calcium-phosphorus ratio.
Dairy has a calcium to phosphorus ratio of about 1.2 to 1, close to the ratio in human bone. This matters because calcium and phosphorus compete for absorption. If you consume too much phosphorus relative to calcium, common in processed food diets due to phosphate additives, your body pulls calcium from bones to maintain the blood balance. Dairy delivers them in the right proportion. Ice cream, being concentrated dairy, does too.
It's literally bone supportive.
In moderation, yes. And I want to keep coming back to that phrase because it's the key. The prompt explicitly said, no one's advocating making this a regular part of one's diet. We're not saying ice cream is kale. We're saying it's not a Twinkie.
Where does the junk food label even come from for ice cream?
A few places. First, the cheap stuff really is junk. Frozen dairy dessert with corn syrup and vegetable oil and a dozen stabilizers, the label fits. Second, ice cream is culturally positioned as a dessert, and desserts get lumped into the junk category in public health messaging. Third, the serving size on the label is half a cup, and almost nobody eats half a cup. The standard ice cream bowl in an American household is about 2 cups.
The actual consumption pattern doesn't match the serving size the nutritional analysis is based on.
If you eat a pint of premium ice cream in one sitting, about 1,000 calories, 100 grams of sugar, 60 grams of fat, that's not a moderate indulgence. That's a meal replacement with the nutritional balance of a birthday party. But that's not the food's fault. That's a portion size issue.
What about the glycemic index? You mentioned fat slowing sugar absorption.
Ice cream has a glycemic index of about 50 to 60, depending on formulation. That's medium. White bread is about 75, a baked potato about 85, pure glucose is 100. The fat and protein significantly blunt the blood sugar spike. A study from 2024, I think out of Tufts, tracked continuous glucose monitor data after different desserts. Ice cream produced a more gradual glucose curve than an equivalent carbohydrate load from cake or cookies.
That's going to surprise a lot of people.
Because we've been trained to think about sugar content in isolation. But the body doesn't encounter sugar in isolation unless you're drinking soda or eating hard candy. The company sugar keeps, fat, protein, fiber, determines how fast it hits the bloodstream and what the insulin response looks like.
The prompt also mentioned the cold specifically. Is there any research on cold food and digestion?
Cold food slows gastric emptying slightly. The stomach has to warm it before release into the small intestine. For most people, this effect is negligible, but for someone with altered bile flow after gallbladder removal, slower gastric emptying can mean more time for the continuous bile drip to mix with the food. It's not a huge effect, but it might explain why the prompt's experience was that cold ice cream felt easier to handle than warm, fatty foods.
There's mechanistic plausibility, even if it's not been studied in a randomized controlled trial specifically for post-cholecystectomy patients eating ice cream.
I'm not aware of any trial that specific. We're extrapolating from known physiology. The stomach warms ingested food, cold food slows gastric emptying, continuous bile flow without a gallbladder means fat digestion works differently. These are established facts. Putting them together into ice cream is easier to digest after gallbladder removal, is a reasonable hypothesis, but not something you'll find in a clinical guideline.
That's the kind of intellectual honesty I appreciate. Let's talk about protein quality.
Milk protein has a biological value of about 91, very high. It's a complete protein with all essential amino acids in good proportions. The PDCAAS protein digestibility corrected amino acid score for milk protein is 1.0, the maximum, as good as egg protein. So a half cup of ice cream delivering 4 or 5 grams of protein is delivering high quality complete protein, not a protein supplement, but contributing meaningful nutrition.
Compare that to other desserts.
A brownie has maybe 2 grams of incomplete protein. Fruit sorbet has essentially 0. Cake has a few grams from egg and flour, but incomplete and with a much higher sugar load. Ice cream is unusual among desserts in delivering complete protein alongside its sugar and fat.
The macronutrient balance is actually reasonable.
For a dessert, remarkably balanced. Calories in premium vanilla come roughly 45% from fat, 45% from carbs, and 10% from protein. Not a weight loss macro split, but not the 90% carb bomb that most desserts are. The fat and protein provide satiety. The sugar provides quick energy and palatability. It's a functional food matrix.
That's a term of art, isn't it?
The FDA defines functional foods as having potentially positive effects on health beyond basic nutrition, usually applied to things like probiotic yogurt or omega-3 enriched eggs. I'm not arguing ice cream should get that label, but I am arguing that premium ice cream shares more characteristics with whole food dairy products than with ultra-processed snack foods. It's closer to cheese than to Cheetos.
That could be a bumper sticker.
I put it on a t-shirt. Ice cream, closer to cheese than Cheetos.
What about calcium bioavailability? Is the calcium in ice cream actually absorbable?
Dairy calcium is about 30% bioavailable, higher than most plant sources. Spinach has more calcium per calorie, but it's bound to oxalates and only about 5% is absorbed. The lactose and vitamin D in dairy enhance calcium absorption. And because ice cream is a concentrated dairy product, water partially removed through freezing, milk solids concentrated, the calcium density is higher than in milk. A half cup of ice cream has about as much calcium as a half cup of milk, but in a more calorie-dense package.
More nutritional punch per bite, but also more calories. That's the trade-off.
Always the trade-off with concentrated foods. Nuts are nutritious and calorie-dense. Cheese is nutritious and calorie-dense. Ice cream sits in that same category. It's not a low-calorie food, and it's not pretending to be. But the calories it delivers come with meaningful nutrition attached.
Let me play devil's advocate. The sugar content still bothers me. 25 grams per serving is a lot, even with the fat slowing absorption. Is there a version of this argument that's just special pleading because ice cream is delicious?
The answer depends on what you're comparing it to. If you're comparing ice cream to eating nothing for dessert, then no, the sugar isn't justified nutritionally. But nobody eats dessert instead of nothing. They eat dessert instead of another dessert. And in the landscape of desserts, ice cream is one of the more nutrient-dense options. It's not special pleading to say a food with protein, calcium, vitamin A, and riboflavin is nutritionally superior to a food with none of those things.
What about the argument that cold temperature masks sweetness, leading to higher sugar formulations?
True for some products. Cold suppresses sweetness perception, so ice cream needs more sugar to taste as sweet as a warm dessert with the same sugar content. But premium brands have been quietly reducing sugar for years. Häagen-Dazs vanilla has gone from about 24 grams per serving to about 21. They're not advertising it as low sugar. They're just doing it because the market expects cleaner labels. And artisanal makers often use less sugar than industrial producers because they're relying on butterfat and egg yolks for texture rather than sugar for freezing point depression.
Freezing point depression? That's why sugar is functional in ice cream, not just sweetening.
Sugar lowers the freezing point of water, keeping ice cream scoopable at freezer temperature instead of freezing into a solid block. Reduce sugar too much and you get a product that's rock hard at 0 degrees. Commercial producers use corn syrup or other sweeteners to manage this. Premium producers balance sugar, fat, and air to get the right texture. It's an engineering problem as much as a culinary one.
The sugar isn't just there for hedonics. It's doing structural work.
That's true of a lot of foods where sugar gets a bad rap. In jam, sugar is a preservative. In bread, it feeds the yeast. In ice cream, it controls texture. That doesn't make it calorie-free, but it does mean reducing sugar isn't as simple as just using less. You have to reformulate the entire product.
The prompt mentioned voices in the scientific community quietly articulating this view. Are there actual scientists defending ice cream?
Dariush Mozafarian at Tufts, a cardiologist and dean of the Friedman School of Nutrition, has been making the case for years that full-fat dairy has been wrongly maligned, and he specifically mentioned ice cream as a food that doesn't deserve its junk food reputation when made traditionally. He published a paper in 2023 looking at dairy fat and cardiovascular outcomes and found neutral to protective associations for most full-fat dairy foods.
A cardiologist defending ice cream. That's a plot twist.
It gets better. A 2024 study from the University of Texas found ice cream consumption was associated with lower risk of type 2 diabetes in observational data. Now, observational data has all the usual confounding problems. People who eat ice cream might be different in other ways, but the finding was robust enough across multiple cohorts that researchers took it seriously.
Wait, lower risk? Not neutral, but actually lower?
In the observational data, yes. The researchers were very careful to say, this doesn't prove ice cream prevents diabetes. It might be that people who eat ice cream in moderation also exercise more or have other healthy habits. Or, reverse causation, people at high risk avoid ice cream. But it complicates the simple, ice cream equals metabolic harm, narrative.
That's going to break some people's brains.
It broke mine a little when I first read it, but it fits with the broader dairy matrix literature. Fermented dairy-like yogurt consistently shows protective associations with type 2 diabetes. Cheese shows neutral associations despite high saturated fat. The pattern across dairy foods suggests something about the dairy matrix. The fermentation, the fat globule structure, the protein composition is modifying the expected metabolic effects.
Ice cream might be benefiting from the dairy matrix effect, even though it's not fermented.
The evidence isn't conclusive, but it's suggestive enough that nutrition researchers are paying attention. The days of reducing food to its macronutrient components and making health predictions from that alone are, or should be, behind us.
What about the digestive angle specifically? You've talked about gastric emptying and bile flow. Is there anything about the emulsification that matters?
In ice cream, the fat is already emulsified. Fat globules dispersed in a water phase with milk proteins and phospholipids stabilizing the emulsion. The stomach has less work to do to break the fat into droplets that lipase enzymes can act on. In fried food, the fat is free and has to be emulsified by bile acids before digestion. For someone without a gallbladder, having the fat pre-emulsified might make a meaningful difference.
Pre-digested is too strong a word, but...
Pre-emulsified is the right word. The mechanical work of creating a stable fat in water emulsion has already been done by the ice cream maker. Your digestive system gets to skip a step.
That connects to why homemade or small batch might feel different from industrial. The emulsion quality is better.
Small batch ice cream typically uses more egg yolks, which are powerful emulsifiers thanks to the lecithin. The emulsion is more stable, the fat droplets smaller and more uniform, and the product more digestible as a result. Industrial ice cream often uses mono and diglycerides as emulsifiers instead of eggs. They work fine for texture, but don't bring the same nutritional cofactors.
We keep returning to the same point. Ingredients matter, processing matters, and the final food is more than the sum of its label numbers.
That's the thesis of this entire episode, and it's the answer to the prompt's question. Ice cream gets an undeserved bad rap because we've been evaluating it using a framework that doesn't capture what it actually is. When you look at premium ice cream as a whole food dairy product, concentrated milk and cream and eggs frozen into a structure that modifies how the body processes it, the junk food label doesn't fit.
With the caveat about moderation.
But here's the thing, moderation is easier with ice cream than with a lot of desserts precisely because it's satiating. The fat and protein signal fullness. You're not going to accidentally eat 8 servings of ice cream the way you might accidentally eat 8 servings of potato chips. The food matrix that makes it nutritionally interesting also makes it self-limiting.
The built-in portion control of satiety.
Try eating a pint of premium ice cream. Now try eating an equivalent calorie amount of gummy bears. The gummy bears go down like nothing, and you're hungry an hour later. The ice cream sits in your stomach and says, "We're done here."
I've done both of these experiments for the record. What about lactose? That's the other common concern with dairy.
Ice cream tends to be better tolerated than milk by people with mild lactose intolerance. The fat slows gastric emptying, giving lactase enzymes more time to work. And the overall lactose load per serving is lower than milk because ice cream is more concentrated. You're eating less volume. A half cup has about 6 to 8 grams of lactose, compared to about 12 grams in a cup of milk.
Even for the lactose sensitive, it might not be the worst choice.
For mild lactose intolerance, probably fine in small amounts. For severe, no dairy product is going to be comfortable. But that's a separate issue from the junk food question.
Let's talk about the psychological dimension. The prompt mentioned feeling like ice cream was slightly healing.
Food as comfort is real, and it's not frivolous. There's a reason we give ice cream to people after surgery. It's calorie dense, easy to swallow, cold on a sore throat, and emotionally associated with childhood and safety. Hospitals stock ice cream because it's one of the few foods that reliably appeals when appetite is suppressed and the body needs calories to heal.
Post-tonsillectomy. Ice cream is practically prescribed.
It is prescribed. And after abdominal surgery, when the digestive system is inflamed and sensitive, cold soft foods are often better tolerated than warm solid foods. Cold has a vasoconstrictive effect that reduces swelling and pain. Think of it like an internal ice pack. That's not pseudoscience.
Internal ice pack. That's a vivid image.
It's a little reductive, but the mechanism is real. For someone with chronic GI sensitivity after gallbladder removal, finding a food that's calorie-dense, nutrient-rich, cold, soft, and emotionally comforting, that's valuable. Not as a treatment, but as part of a livable diet.
We should probably acknowledge the elephant in the room. There are people who will hear this and say we're justifying indulgence.
I'd say we're contextualizing it. There's a difference between saying ice cream is health food, which we are absolutely not saying, and saying premium ice cream in moderation is less destructive than its reputation suggests and may have some nutritional and digestive properties worth understanding. The first is a headline. The second is a conversation.
That's the show in a nutshell. Headlines versus conversations.
And the prompt was explicitly asking for the conversation, not the headline. The answer is yes, with the important qualifier that we're talking about actual ice cream made from actual food ingredients, not the air and stabilizer product that shares its freezer aisle.
What should people look for if they want the good stuff?
Read the ingredient list. If it says milk, cream, sugar, egg yolks, and whatever the flavor is, vanilla extract, strawberry puree, cocoa, that's ice cream. If it has more than 5 or 6 ingredients, or if you see corn syrup, vegetable oil, gar gum, carrageenan, or natural flavors as a major component, that's a frozen dairy dessert. Those things aren't poison, but they indicate a product engineered for shelf stability and cost rather than nutrition and flavor.
Overrun isn't on the label, though.
No, but you can test it at home. Weigh a cup of ice cream. A cup is 237 milliliters. Premium ice cream at about 30% overrun should weigh about 180 to 200 grams per cup. Cheap ice cream at 100% overrun will weigh about 100 to 120 grams. You're paying for air.
The weight test. I like that.
Or just buy brands you trust. Häagen-Dazs, Ben & Jerry's, Jenny's, McConnell's, Van Leeuwen, these are all making actual ice cream. And if you have a local dairy that makes ice cream on site, that's almost always the best option. Fresh milk, minimal processing, no stabilizers needed because it's not traveling across the country.
The Yukon Dairy Bar model.
Still going strong. They produce about 200,000 scoops a year. The best-selling flavor is still the Dairy Bar Vanilla.
Do you miss it?
I miss the free ice cream. I don't miss cleaning the batch freezer at midnight. That machine has 1,000 nooks and crannies, and every single one fills with frozen vanilla base that has to be scrubbed out by hand.
The unglamorous side of artisanal food production.
But it gave me an appreciation for what goes into good ice cream. It's not just ingredients, it's attention. The pasteurization temperature curve, the aging time for the base, the dasher speed, the draw temperature, the hardening rate. All of these affect the final product in ways that show up in texture, flavor, and, I'd argue, digestibility.
The things you can't put on a nutrition label.
Corn. All right, let's land this plane. The prompt asked whether ice cream gets an undeserved bad rap. What's the one-sentence version? Premium ice cream made from milk, cream, sugar, and eggs is a whole food dairy product that delivers meaningful nutrition alongside its sugar and fat. And its physical structure, cold, emulsified, aerated, may make it easier to digest than its macronutrient profile alone would predict, particularly for people with altered bile flow after gallbladder surgery.
That's a long sentence.
It's a nuanced topic.
And the moderation piece?
Half a cup, not a pint. As a treat, not a meal. The case for ice cream isn't that it's kale, it's that among desserts, it's one of the more nutritionally defensible options. And for someone with a sensitive digestive system, it might be one of the few indulgences that doesn't come with a side of regret.
That feels like a reasonable place to land.
I'll add one more thing. The prompt mentioned that no one is advocating making ice cream a regular part of one's diet. I actually think quality ice cream in small amounts can be a regular part of a healthy diet. A small scoop of good vanilla ice cream after dinner a couple times a week? I don't see a nutritional argument against that, and I see several arguments for it. Calcium, protein, satiety, pleasure.
The pleasure argument matters.
It really does. We've over-medicalized eating to the point where people feel guilty about enjoying food. That guilt is probably more harmful than the ice cream.
Now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
In the 1900s, a naturalist in the Azores discovered that a species of nudibranch secreted a compound that turned out to be an extremely effective antifreeze for fish blood. And marine biologists only realized 50 years later that the same chemical was accidentally preserving deep-sea specimens they thought had simply survived decompression.
The fish were already dead. They just looked fresh. To wrap this up, I think the bigger question this prompt opens up is how many other foods we've misclassified because we're looking at them through the wrong lens. If ice cream's reputation doesn't survive contact with the food matrix research, what else is waiting for a second look?
Cheese was demonized for decades because of saturated fat. Eggs were demonized because of cholesterol. Both have been largely rehabilitated. Ice cream might be next in line for reconsideration. The nutrition science establishment moves slowly, but it does move.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtopf for producing, and thanks to everyone listening. If you want more episodes like this one, you can find us at myweirdprompts.com or on Spotify.
Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.